Everyone, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jikoji. For how many of you here is it your first time to Jikoji? About half. So welcome. I'm so glad you made it up the mountain, that you're safe and warm up here. And I thank you for your practice with us this morning. It's our custom often to start with an old Zen story. And I have one for you today. It relates to impermanence and to the Parinirvana ceremony, which you participated in. This is case number 55 from the Book of Serenity. Shoryuroko is the name of that collection. I still have morning voice. Sorry, hang on. A monk asked Master Yunmen, when the tree withers and the leaves fall, what then? Yunmen replied, body exposed in the golden wind. For me, this koan speaks to the fact that life does what it does. We're not in charge. Most of our distress, most of our suffering comes from this idea that we are in control and that we can change the way life delivers itself and us to life. If we could only have a redo for some of the events in our life, or perhaps a rewrite, things would be better, things would be fine. But it's not true. It's a delusion. We just have a different set of issues if we could have a redo. The Buddha's last teaching, you heard it this morning. The Buddha's last breath before he passed is right on point. Tomorrow we start Nehane. It's the first in the year cycle of four sesshins that the founder of our tempen, Kobun Chino Otogawa Roshi, created for us to follow the cycle of the Buddha's life, really. And a sesshin, for those of you who don't know, is an extended time to sit in quiet, to walk in quiet, to eat in quiet, to be with extended stillness and space, paying close attention the entire time. To direct experience. This particular Nehane Sesshin is called Nehane because it is about the Buddha's last teaching. So I encourage anyone here who is brave and willing to kind of jump into the deep end to come to Sesshin. Many of us came to practice by deciding we are going to go to a Sesshin and jump in. It's a wonderful way to get wet and deepen your practice, whatever it is. You can sign up on the website, but you better hurry. It starts tomorrow afternoon. So, Nehan and Nehane is the Japanese word for nirvana. In Pali, nirvana is pronounced nibbana. You'll hear nibbana and nirvana or Nehan. And the actual translation is blowing out. Like a candle, blowing out. The blowing out activity of our grasping, clinging, the suffering and unease that is associated with our clinging and grasping. So when we commemorate the Buddha's passing, sorry. When we commemorate the Buddha's passing, we are marking and celebrating his release from samsara, the cyclic birth and death, and birth and death and rebirth. Samsara is a term that means circling around, running around in circles. It also can mean wandering. So You can imagine wandering around in circles. And samsara, that notion of a cyclic birth, death, rebirth, is based upon a belief that a person continues in this cyclic realm to be born and reborn in various realms until he or she or they are released. And that release is called nirvana. So, as you heard this morning, the Buddha's last words before he was released and entered nirvana were these: all conditioned things are impermanent. Strive diligently for liberation. This is 45 years of teaching the Buddha has done. 45 years of teaching. It's a pretty impressive career. 45 years of teaching. After 45 years of teaching, the Buddha could have, kind of felt burned out. Many people do after 45 years of one career. He could have left his Sangha, left us with words like, life is an illusion. Poof, I'm out of here. It almost seems reasonable that he could have, but no. His final words were one. More words of compassion and wise and practical. All conditioned things are impermanent. Strive diligently for liberation. Seems to me classic Buddha, straight to the point, very intelligent, and pretty inconvenient for those of us who are still clinging to basically everything. I really like this about the Buddha's teaching, that inconvenience makes you wake up. In order to understand and appreciate the Buddha's parinirvana, we didn't needn't have a kind of rigid belief in samsara, the cyclic system of birth and death and birth and death. We don't need to literally believe in this idea of being reborn in various realms and forms. In an unending cycle of birth and death based upon karmic threads. But beyond its historical and spiritual significance, the parinirvana can serve as a metaphor for our lives right here, right now, not the next time around, now. Parinirvana can be seen as a metaphor for letting go of our attachments. As you know, the Buddha taught that the principal form of our suffering is clinging, attachment. The principal form of attachment and clinging, of course, is to the self that we create. In Sanskrit, the term for clinging is upadana. And together with tanha, which means thirst or craving, these are the primary causes of our suffering. Clinging, craving, thirsting. The cessation of clinging again is nirvana, the coming to rest of the grasping mind. And as I mentioned, the principal way that all of us continue to suffer is by clinging to this. Maintaining this can be a full-time job. But the Buddha teaches us we have a choice. We suffer as a result of clinging and maintaining this self that we create. We imagine this self to be an unchanging arising, a thingness that is ourselves. But the Buddha was very explicit, and he said, there's no such thing as an unchanging self or an unchanging anything. There's no such thing as a thing separate from anything. No thing that is a self, separate. In Buddhism, the core of this teaching of not self or anatta, is that there is no unchanging self or person. None of us. You know this. doesn't take rocket science kind of thinking to know that you are not maybe who you were when you came up the mountain this morning. Certainly not who you were a year ago. The idea that this self is fixed at any moment is an illusion. So we can understand parinirvana, the Buddha's parinirvana, as a metaphor for the complete release on our part of any clinging or attachment to a particular version or form or expression or manifestation of this thing, this. This sounds very lofty, I assume, but it's really very practical and not even difficult. We all have experienced both minor and major personal transformations in our lives. When we shed some part, we know it's over. Maybe you shed some old clothes because they don't fit. Maybe you change your haircut. Maybe you shave your head. Maybe you end a marriage. Maybe you end a relationship. Maybe you begin a marriage. Maybe you begin a relationship. The same thing goes for identities. They change. Wife, mother, grandmother, sister, daughter. Old beliefs. Old ways of being in relationship. When we release our attachments to the ideas we have about who this self is and how she should behave and what looks right, we actually make room for a bigger, expansive idea about what this is, what you are too. The more room we make for this expression, the more room we make for everybody's expression. So, as the Buddha let go of his physical form, we too let go of our grudges, our fears, our ideas, our opinions, our desires that things be different, our desire that things stay the same. Let go. Even our idea of who this is. By the way, sitting sesshin can be really helpful in this process. I'm not really advertising for it because it's a decision you really have to meet. But sitting sesshin is a great opportunity of facing what there might be for you to let go. And after a couple of days of doing nothing but sitting, it becomes a very viable option. But not just at sesshin. This letting go, this parinirvana in your own personal life can take place moment by moment by moment by moment in both large and small ways. When we leave behind a job, when we leave behind a limiting belief, a diminishing belief in ourselves or anyone else. When we leave behind a regret, we're practicing a small parinirvana. When we allow relationships to change, because they do. When we allow ourselves to change, because we do. Instead of clinging to how we think we ought to be or how I think you ought to be, when we just allow it to move and we move with it, dancing with life as it arrives, we align ourselves with impermanence. We are practicing with parinirvana. So each moment of every day offers this opportunity to practice with parinirvana. An opportunity to release something unnecessary, unhelpful, maybe unkind, and step closer to liberation, to freedom. For not just you, by the way, we're all in this together. Every time we meet impermanence with acceptance instead of resistance, we practice parinirvana, kind of beginning again. So I told you I was gonna talk a little bit about this koan and parinirvana, but I'm gonna give it one more moment to tell you that a year ago, right here, right before Nehane, which I was going to be teaching as I am this year, happened to be a big parinirvana time in my life. How many of you in the last year have had something that you feel, it doesn't have to be major by anybody else's ideas, but something you feel is a major change in your life? Somebody's already raising their hand. How many of you can raise your hand and say, major change? Like almost everybody in the room here. How about online? Some change is going on? Oh, yeah, everybody. Okay. Well, so there's nothing special really about it, is it? It's kind of ordinary. So it was for me last year. Last year at Parinirvana, right before Nehane began, was a very poignant time in my life. It was about 6 weeks after my husband of almost 40 years had passed away, after a long illness, a long neurodegenerative illness. So he'd been gone from me really for a long time, but there he was really gone. His body was gone. And here I was, beginning a new life at Jokoji. I was at my home in Santa Barbara County, packing up the last crate to move here. I'd been hired to teach here. I was moving here, beginning a new world. I was on the threshold of the door there with my last crate, moving here. By the way, you really don't need as much as you think you need, which I found out. My last crate, I was in the doorway heading up here, and I looked around my empty, big living room, and it felt both empty and heavy, really heavy. Like there was this ghost of a life, not just my life, my whole family's life, even the pet's life. Everybody was still in there somehow, and it was empty. More of my life had been spent there than any other place in my life. I was moved around a lot when I was young. And so I had a lot of time in this one place. And the house was in this moment echoing birth and death and laughter and crying and arguing and harmony. All the growing of all of us beings, even the animals that had come and gone, our family, our pets, our friends. And that life no longer existed. It was gone. And there was a person here in that moment at the threshold who wanted a do-over. I wanted to just rewrite a little bit of my life, make me look a little better. I wanted to feel better about the whole thing. It had been a pretty great life, but still, there are some pieces I'd like to redo. Even though I might have had a do-over, if it could have been, I realized even then I would have just had another set of issues to regret. I wish I could do over those too. And in that moment, standing there with my big black crate, which you can see outside my room, I've got a bunch of those Costco crates that moved my life up here. In that moment, in the silence and the echoing of that house, I remembered Koban's expression, I think Koban's expression of the Buddha's last words. Many of you have seen them on a scroll that Jiro occasionally hangs. They're very, very meaningful and poignant. Koban said, falling apart, everything is always falling apart, and there's nothing we can do about it. All conditioned things are impermanent. Strive diligently for liberation. So, standing there with my last crate, I felt the emptiness, the echoing of the house as this tremendous gift. Not a loss, or maybe a gift and a loss. This was a parinirvana for me. The end of this identity, a particular identity, the end of a phase, the end of a life. A self that no longer existed was leaving that building and that house. And I was taking her with me both. So I took in a big breath. I stepped out the door, and it tasted like freedom. It still tastes like freedom. I make that choice moment to moment to moment. And you get to experience it at any moment, too. We don't direct life. We cannot undo what's happened. We are not in charge of everything, just our conduct. By the way, one of the beauties of Sesshin is what happens when you let go of control, when you follow the schedule, when you just do as you're told for a week, which means time to sit, time to eat, time to work, time to walk, time to sleep, time to get up. That's Sesshin. You would not believe what a relief it is to not make decisions for a week. So we cannot undo, we cannot unwrite, we cannot redo, but we do get to experience over and over again, beginning again. In this moment, in this space, right now, to acknowledge that this now contains everything. Nothing's left behind. Nothing's left out. No one. So this is our practice. This is what we do. We acknowledge our own direct experience. We see and live life as all one thing: birth, death, rebirth, death, suffering, anxiety, ice cream, whatever. All one thing. And our questions and our confusion, all one thing. What this is right now and what's next? Surprise. We don't know. How we let go into this awareness, take refuge, find relief in this letting go, is what old Yunmen said in that koan. So you should know that Master Yunmen was a Chinese Chan teacher. He's one of my favorite guys because usually when he speaks, it's very poetic. So let's say we're asking old Master Yunmen right now. When the tree withers and the leaves fall, what then? What happens when life declines and ends? What happens? What remains after loss and suffering and death? What's left when our attachments are gone? And the old Master Yunmen, our old friend, says, body exposed in the golden wind. So, body exposed. To me, this suggests complete openness. Body exposed, naked in the Zendo, naked in your life. This kind of vulnerability, people don't like that word because it seems weak, but vulnerability is just open. You're open, completely exposed to what it is right now, as it is. Openness that we can face the here and now and our illusions and our attachments and all of our ego-driven concerns. Openness, body exposed, is how we can meet with this raw, direct experience of our experience, our lives as it is. Existence. And the golden wind, body exposed in the golden wind. So to me, this symbolizes the wind, change. And autumn or a golden always reminds me of autumn because the leaves are gold. The autumn, gold. the preciousness of gold, right? The precious wind of autumn, symbolizing impermanence and change and preciousness all in once, like our fleeting life, like each fleeting moment, precious wind, like us. So our old friend Yunmen, rather than offering a conceptual answer to us, points to experience, direct experience, standing fully exposed and open, body exposed to the open wind, completely present now, and each now, and each now, and each now, and here, wherever here is. Can you feel that? Have you felt it? The wind in your life moving you? So, those of you who sweetly raised your hands about change in your life in the last year, maybe you can relate. The wind moves you into this new position, this new place, and you find yourself open. What else can you do? Open, present, on the threshold, and realizing that impermanence is not a problem to be solved. Yunmen doesn't try to fix impermanence. He just tells the monk, experience it fully. Let go of resistance to change. Body exposed, surrender to the natural flow of life as it is, instead of trying to cling to what's actually already gone. Yunmen reminds us to look up, to look around, to get our eyes off the pavement, as Angie Boisevain likes to teach. Pick your head up, look around. When we simply lift our heads and lift our eyes and stand in the winds of now and now and now, Yunmen points us to the beauty of impermanence, the incredible liberative factors of impermanence, the preciousness of the golden wind. And that reminds us that change, inevitable change, something sometimes uncomfortable change, is not something to fear. That it carries a kind of golden radiance in its opportunities to begin again. Parinirvana, this ceremony that we did, what happened with the Buddha, can also be a metaphor, of course, of letting go of our illusions about how life should be. And our illusions are ignorance. So, letting go of a false self, some puffed up version of yourself, you think you know something? Letting go, not knowing, way more fun than knowing. Trust me on this. I'm old, I've learned. Letting go of any kind of grasping for permanence in an impermanent world, including this. So when we recognize that we want to be in charge, there's an illusion we can let go of in any given moment. And knowing how creating that clinging to I want to run this creates suffering for us and for everybody. With each little parinirvana that you experience in your own lives, the truth of impermanence emerges and something freer is born. When you let go of the self that thought it had to stay still, or anybody else had to stay still, that something freer that is born recognizes itself as a co-creation of everybody right now, Without you, no me. Without me, no you. What is this is in context of this. You're the context for me. I'm the context for you. We are the context of each other. And in that, you can throw in floor and the lint and the trees and everything that's ever been is context. So the Buddha's last teaching, his parinirvana, gives us a way to live with the awareness of impermanence, with a moving self, with everything moving. The Buddha in his last breaths is kind enough to give us the teaching in a nutshell. Everything changes. Let go. He reminds us to live with kind of an urgency, but not fear. We don't have endless time. So what truly matters? Now. Matters now. What leads to your fulfillment? What leads to peace? The original law of nature, the Buddha is telling us, is impermanence. And with his last breath, he tells us to remember in every moment. Life is short, friends. Going, going, gone. So best to pay attention. What's here, right now? Be awake, strive diligently to be awake to what's actually right in front of you. This and this and this as it is changing. May we all live each moment in little parinirvanas with this awareness of the Buddha's last teaching. All conditioned things are impermanent. Strive diligently for liberation. May we treat each moment as this golden opportunity to begin again. Fully exposed in the golden wind, letting everything in and out. Thank you for listening. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to ask questions, comments, or whatever comes up for you. And you guys get to go first this week because every other week you're always given short shrift. So anybody online who has something to offer. Randy.
Yeah, the whole thing of impermanence, well, there's kind of a dance with it for me anyway. I don't know for other people, but yeah, you see it, you can accept it, and it's moving in permanence. And I say this as a person more so with my body than anything, but it's like accepting it and pushing back against it. We do things. We do things as people to stay healthy. We eat well. We exercise. We're pushing against this impermanence, being aware of it, but at the same time, doing a dance with it. I don't know how to put it. And so anyway, impermanence. Yeah. And then one other thing I want to mention. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I'm unmuted. Okay, good. It's sort of like of all the years I've listened to Buddhist talks and stuff. I don't know, maybe I've heard about three or four versions of Buddha's last words. And I think that's true with any religion, that this is what so and so said, or this and so, and that, 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 you know, that's how it is. And the one that's always stuck with me, because it's made sense in some fundamental way, is be a light unto yourself. You know, and the story is all these guys gather around Buddha and they're freaking out. What are we going? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? You're going to be gone. You know, and he said, be a light unto yourself. And that's the one that's stuck with me. But the impermanence one, that's good too. I'll try to remember that. But remember, to me, it's just this. I guess it's, yeah, everything is never, maybe that's why we sit, is to figure out that everything isn't really quite straightforward, but we got to live with it. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying, but there it is. Okay.
Keep dancing, man. And Randy, I also want to tell you, keep dancing. And let's see, Akbar's holding a book, Dancing with the Masters. There we go. What we read from this morning, I don't know if you were here when we did a little piece of the Pali Canon, the Maha Parinirvana Sutta. Both those expressions are in there. The Buddha does say, be an island unto yourself, be a refuge. And so it's in there. Also.
Okay.
So it's all in there. So keep dancing.
A lot of good advice.
Thank you, Randy.
Okay.
I'm interested in your expression about resisting by taking care of the body as a form of resistance. I don't see it that way, but I so love the dance part that I'll accept it. That you're thinking of it as kind of this movement, you know, as you dance, there's this pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not rejecting impermanence, yeah. But I'm
you mean resisting, you mean taking care of the vehicle is a way of saying I'm defying my demise, but I don't see it that way.
No,
I think you're taking care of the vehicle until it's done.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else online? Tom's lips are moving, so you have to unmute. Unmute.
There we go.
There we go. Hi, Tom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're saying is, I mean, you gotta take your vehicle in for maintenance. So that's why you exercise, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a lovely talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, friends online, going, going, gone. Ready? Raise your hand if you want to ask. Okay, thanks for being here. Okay, your turn. Speak really loud. I had that problem too. I'd give you some tea, but it'd be too far. You feel a little tension between these two. She's
encapsulating me.
Yes, I'm going to. So she's... we have a question in the room about my saying that you should begin again in every moment, and that suggests kind of a let go, just let go, go with the flow. And then we're also, the Buddha is also telling us, strive diligently, which sounds like do something, right? And that's to this questioner that there's this, you know, sorry, dynamic tension between these two things. And yes. There's a dynamic tension, basically all the time and everything from my own experience. But I don't think the Buddha was saying let go, like be passive and do nothing and just be, you know, a blob on the face of the earth. Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think he's recommending that. I think he's saying meet with what's right here. Make your choice right here. This person right now engaged in this world in relationship with everything that's ever happened and right here, make a choice from that place, not based on who I was yesterday or who I was or who my parents were or what my upbringing was like. It's all in there already, you know, but not sticking to a place that's not wholesome and helpful. If it's not wholesome, what are you doing? That's not striving diligently. That's being ignorant, willfully ignorant. And that doesn't help you. And it doesn't help me. And it doesn't help us. And it doesn't help the world. And it doesn't help the planet. So there is this kind of, I like Randy's version of this dance kind of all the time. What's this? How do I meet it in a wholesome way? Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Don't just sit around.
I was reflecting on the idea of grief. And when you first said just expose, let the body expose in the golden wound, I really like that phrase. And mm-hmm. and also the idea of like focusing on each present. I felt that I had some worry in terms of not counting what has happened in the past. In the sense that, like, say I have a lot of trauma from my past and I'm processing through a lot of that and grief. And sometimes, like, someone will come up to me and say, like, oh, but you are here now. You are having a great life. Why are you still crying? Why are you still sad? And that made me feel a little bit forced to dismiss what has happened in the past that I still needed processing. And I felt like, but when you used the phrase, letting the body expose in the golden wind, I think it reminded me that like grieving or like being with your emotion is part of being in this changing world, the impermanent world. And that is part of the golden wind itself. The present could be calling you to grieve. The present could be calling you to embrace yourself and heal your trauma. Doesn't mean you have to suppress it, dismiss it, and just say like, oh, I'm having a good life today, so I don't think about what happened in the past. So yeah, I just wanted to share that because I think it really enlightened me.
Whoa, watch out, folks.
No, like, as in, not that.
I know, I'm teasing, I'm totally teasing you. I am so happy to hear that it met you, that you were able to receive something around allowing whatever is arriving now and not trying to have to be happy or sad in any given moment, just meeting what's here. Yeah, grief is a process. And I really appreciate you saying processing. I think that life is processing us, you know? And if you try to reject it, it's not going to ever leave. It's not going to get integrated into the whole fabric of your experience of life. So I wouldn't worry so much about what other people think about where you should be and what kind of expression you should have on your face. You be honest with yourself, and you're not going to be stuck if you keep meeting.